now.
Yeah, and that revolution starts right now. You are listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. This is Sue Hildebrand. The Real Issue is a public affairs talk show, and we are here every Wednesday night from 6 until 7 p.m. This edition of The Real Issue is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Paradise Community Guild. Fostering community by nurturing creativity, practicing stewardship of nature, and promoting values of sustainability. Paradise Community Guild invites all people of goodwill and community spirit to help us carry out that intent. To get involved, visit paradiseguild.org. You can also find them on Facebook. You can also give them a call at 762-1490. So as I sit here in my studio, I can look through the glass and I can see Grant and Leah and Clay setting up for a concert with the social justice singer-songwriter David Rovix. I can even see David Rovix in the room through the glass. It's so good to have him here in the studio with us. David Rovix will be playing live in Studio 416 starting at 7 o'clock, and the doors opened at 6 up here. So I'm sure there's still some tickets available, so come on down and join us in the studio. The songs tonight on this program, on The Real Issue, will all be songs by David Rovix. And so, I forgot to write down the address. The address down here in the studio is 341 on Broadway. We are just next to the downtown plaza. So come on down and join us. There are seats available. It's going to be a good, intimate night with David Rovix. So anyway, I hope to see you. So if you are a regular listener of The Real Issue and of KZFR in general, then you are definitely aware of the Valley's Edge development project that is being challenged right now by people throughout Butte County through a referendum effort. The proposed 2,700 mostly luxury homes will sprawl over 1,500 acres on the southeast side of Chico. The development will be the size of the town of Gridley. It will require new infrastructure, will impact our groundwater, and will destroy critical natural habitat. What it will not do is address the affordable housing crisis here in Chico. So, for example, just this morning, Chico City Council member Tom Van Overbeek wrote in a letter to the editor in the Enterprise Record, he wrote, quote, "Valley's Edge and the availability of affordable housing have nothing to do with each other." And then Van Overbeek goes on to patronize the poor reader about basic supply and demand economics and why he believes Valley's Edge is a good idea. What Overbeek does not say in his letter to the editor is that he must recuse himself from the voting on this project because his property lies adjacent to the proposed development site and his property value will likely rise as a result of the development. Another fact that Van Overbeek fails to tell the reader is that he is the founder of the disgraced Political Action Committee Citizens for a Safe Chico. His political action committee raised $250,000 in order to get a compliant and conservative city council elected last cycle so that it could approve this very development. And through public records, we know that 40% of that money came directly from developers. And just as a reminder, Overbeek's political action committee lied to the people, to voters, so egregiously that Cal Water had to issue a statement countering the lies. So anyway, back to the referendum. The period for gathering signatures to put the question of the development on the ballot for voters to decide is ending this Saturday. If you're still interested in signing the petition, you can find out more by going to smartgrowthchico.org. But another reason many folks oppose this development project is because of the environmental impact on critical wildlife habitat. Last week, a lawsuit was filed in the Butte County Superior Court by a coalition of environmental organizations against the city of Chico. The Center for Biological Diversity, Aqua Alliance, and the Sierra Club are challenging the city for violating the California Environmental Quality Act when approving this project. And that's known as CEQA, so we'll refer to that tonight. But the battle between the folks who want to protect the open space that surrounds Chico and the folks who want to develop the area is not a new battle. In fact, as investigative journalist and editor of Chico Soul, Leslie Layton, has found, this battle has been going on for over 35 years. In her latest article called Valley's Edge Opponents Worry About Environmental Impacts, Fight Over Foothill Development Has Racked Chico for Decades, Layton writes, quote, because the state is in dire need of more housing and at the same time grappling with climate change and biodiversity loss, never has a struggle over clashing visions of the city's future felt so crucial to so many people, end quote. So during the first part of The Real Issue, we will talk about the lawsuit that was just filed against the city of Chico and the developer of Valley's Edge. And then we'll talk with journalist Leslie Layton about the history of Chico's development battle. So to talk about the lawsuit and about the history of the protection of this exact land, I have on the phone with me the executive director of Aqua Alliance and one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit, Barbara Vlamis. I am, as always, happy to welcome you back to The Real Issue, Barbara.
It is a pleasure to join you. Thanks for having me, Sue.
Always. Always good to have you. So Barbara, I do want to spend the bulk of our time on the 30-year, as you put it, the 30-year history of the city trying to protect this land. But before we get there, let's talk about the lawsuit. I know a lot of people have told me about it. Have you seen this lawsuit? Have you seen the press release? And so I want to make sure we cover this thoroughly. In the press release, go on.
Well, yeah, I actually edited the petition and a little bit of the press release, so I am familiar with them.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So for listeners, in the press release last week, it states that the Coalition of Environmental Organizations are suing the city because it failed fully to fully assess the wildfire danger, the impact on the groundwater, the destruction of the vernal pools, and more. Barbara Vlamis, talk about this lawsuit, what's in it, and then ultimately, what is the process? That's always my question for you, is what is the process after this?
All righty. Well, the lawsuit is challenging the approvals, which are many, from the city of Chico for this project. Clearly, under CEQA, you are required to circulate for a project of this size an environmental impact report, also referred to as an EIR, and, you know, obtain comments and respond to those comments. And like many jurisdictions, the city of Chico frequently ignores comments that are appropriate for the level of review that is at hand. It gives the city actually an opportunity to avoid a lawsuit by reading what experts have to say about the different impacts from a project like this, which include air quality and water supply, threats to the environment in many ways, biological and other ways. So the city could have avoided this, but they put their chin up and said, okay, sue us. So here we are challenging their obvious denial of facts on the ground that don't only come from organizations like Aqua Alliance and the Center for Biological Diversity, but also from the Butte County Association of Governments that has tried to implement a habitat conservation plan after a threatened lawsuit 2 decades ago almost, that also saw the value in this land in southeast Chico, both this property and the one to its immediate west where we are also in litigation.
And that's the Stonegate property?
Yes.
Okay, I want to get back to those in a minute. Barbara, talk about a lot of this stuff is always kind of wonky, and you know, when we talk about CEQA and EIRs and so on, and NEPA, when we bring in the feds, all of that stuff. So let me ask you this: give us a breakdown, or sort of work with me, and then when I sort of lose my thread, tell me, give me the next steps. So this is, as I understand it, we have this giant development project, and by law, under the California Environmental Quality Act, they have to do these studies to find out what is the environmental impact and all of the quality of life impact and so on and so on. And so once that has been done, it's open to the public for comment. And what you're saying is that the city ignored that public comment. I think that's what you're saying. If that's true, what should the city have done to avoid a lawsuit?
What they should do is actually go back to the drawing board, like some jurisdictions do when they it's pointed out to them that they have failed under the law to analyze and or propose adequate mitigation for the impacts that will come from this project. And so they have a choice. Sadly, many jurisdictions, as I mentioned before, just put their chin up and say, I dare you to sue us, instead of doing the hard work to find out from the public if the developer and the city's consultants have not done an adequate job of disclosing and analyzing the impacts from putting, you know, almost 5,700 new people on the east side of Chico in a fire in a zone that is called a wildland urban interface, where wildfire has occurred in three of the last 20 years, and we have many endangered and threatened species. Therefore, their habitats that are out there are also under threat. Greenhouse gas impacts. I mean, these are things required by the state of California. It's not something I make up,
right,
or
sure,
any other activist. And we're just trying to get the city to follow the law as laid out in California.
So let me ask you this. You said that what the city should have done was to analyze and mitigate. And is it possible, and what I'm really getting at is, what is the legal requirement for mitigation? So what I mean by that is, if they analyze the damage, or we'll be diplomatic and say the impact, and they say, we can live with that, and Aqua Alliance and the Center for Biological Diversity and Sierra Club says, oh no, that is unacceptable impact. Is there a requirement that the city mitigate that impact? And I'm just curious, what's involved in this?
They are required to try to the best of their ability to mitigate impacts, and if they feel they can't, if there is such an overriding urgency to the project, they can issue what are called overriding considerations. But if they do that, trying to avoid more serious mitigation, or, again, that they can't mitigate an impact, it leaves them very open and vulnerable to litigation, because you are supposed to really try,
right,
to avoid that at all costs.
Right, right. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. I have Barbara Vlamis, Executive Director of Aqua Alliance, on the phone with me talking about a lawsuit that was just filed with the Butte County Superior Court against the city of Chico and the developer of the Valley's Edge project. As you know, as we've just been talking about, not following the law that says, through the CEQA requirements, doing the environmental impact report, not analyzing and mitigating the negative impacts on our community. So, Barbara, and let me throw it out, David Rovics is in the studio, not in my studio, but he's out the window of my studio, and he's going to be singing at 7 o'clock. So I'm looking, it's starting to fill up out there. So if you want to join us, there are seats available. We're at 341 Broadway on the fourth floor. So come on down. It's going to be a great night. Barbara Vlamis, let's just I know you well enough to know that when you received that environmental impact report, you read it very, very, very closely. That's what you're so good at. And you've already mentioned there a negative impact on wildlife habitat, greenhouse gas emissions. What else did you see in that report where you felt like, no, we must do better in this community? What else are some of the concerns in that impact report?
Well, I have to say, you know, traffic is not generally my specialty, but trying to figure out how to move the number of people out there that they plan to put in that area, particularly say there is an urgent evacuation required, requires altering the known infrastructure that we have so significantly. I mean, people are going to start not recognizing Chico at all. And I really hope in the old days, in the 80s, it was No Way San Jose. I hope we don't become like Roseville. It is a revolting town.
Yes.
It has just been ruined by the powers that be down there. And so the traffic is another area. Obviously, air quality is, they can never mitigate, really, air quality, so they override that almost always. And I guess, because biology is one of my areas of focus, as well as water, you know, it is a crying shame to think about that the Butte County Association of Governments, hardly a radical left-wing organization, the people that are supposed to bring money to Butte County for transportation, had this land and the adjoining Schmidbauer land in their Area 1 and 2 priorities for preservation.
Mm.
You know, so the habitat that is there is highly valuable, and the point of having a habitat conservation plan is to give agencies that have endangered species authority a secure knowledge in what is being protected, and it gives the jurisdictions knowledge where they can actually build and not run into these kind of headaches. We've been trying to tell developers and the city of Chico used to listen in the 90s to this, but that has unfortunately gone by the wayside recently. And so we don't have an approved HCP, Habitat Conservation Plan, that would have kind of settled all the battles. I mean, I can't tell you how many developers I've talked to through the years about it.
Barbara, you're bringing up a lot of good points. Let me see if I can pull them together, because let's move into the history of this area. And, you know, one of the things that we're going to talk about in the second part of this hour on The Real Issue is with Leslie Layton. And she wrote in an article that was just published on Chico Soul. It's called Valley's Edge: Opponents Worry About Environmental Impact, Fight Over Foothill Development Has Wrecked Chico for Decades. And you're in that article. You are quoted in that article. And part of it is this idea of the Green Line was approved back in the late 70s to limit growth on the west side. And there's this, you know, this idea. There's a bunch of people in the article that say, oh, yeah, well, we assumed that we could develop on the east. And Tom Lando, who was the former manager of Chico, city manager of Chico, up until I think 2006, he said we didn't understand the environmental value of that area. So Barbara, talk about, bring some of those things in together, and if you don't mind, bring in the Butte Regional Conservation Plan that BCAG, Butte Environmental BCAG Association of Governments, created to identify those areas that should be preserved and the areas where development should happen.
Well, I was hired by Butte Environmental Council in 1991 to go out and protect this kind of habitat. So that's why I have a background in it.
Mm.
So for over 30 years, vernal pools, and then water, when I could see that the degradation of our groundwater and our surface waters was also happening, has been a focus of mine for over 30 years. And the reason Beck had a focus on that at that time was exactly because of this, because of the Green Line, and it's like we can go build now on the east side that was sometimes referred to as scab land because people did not understand what's out there. I found, you know, learning on the go here about the whole habitat and the species in it, that nobody around here understood the thing, and that trying to protect it on a local level was going to be fruitless. And so I started working with the federal agencies that had some jurisdiction over this and learning along the way. And, you know, the values out here are just different. They aren't prime ag land. We have prime ag land protected by the Green Line. But California has lost over 95% of its wetlands, vernal pools being among them. That's why we have so many endangered species in California, second only to Hawaii. And so we are short-sighted when we think that we can just keep bulldozing. You know, it's like my project doesn't make a difference, does it? You know, it doesn't matter that 95% of something is lost or some species are on the brink of extinction. Can't my thing go through? And it's like, now eventually the law is supposed to stop that. And that's what I've been trying to uphold. And the Butte County Association of Governments did extensive mapping and studies to demonstrate what areas should be preserved. And they aren't all in any one community. But they, Chico, depending on how you look at it, is blessed or cursed with a lot of wetlands and a very special endangered species, the Butte County meadowfoam. And so we have a footprint already within Chico that has lots of potential for infill development, and we all know it. Some people don't like that idea, and just because they can see open land, they think, well, we just keep building in the open land. But there are laws against that, and that's why BCAG was trying to preserve parts of these areas in Southeast Chico, among others.
Barbara Vlamis, the Habitat Conservation Plan, or what it's called, what BCAG created, was the Butte, what they're calling it, the Butte Regional Conservation Plan.
Right.
That is just as if I understand it, it is, they have mapped it out and they have figured out, you know, where is good areas to protect, what is good areas to develop, and the purpose of that was to essentially say, if you have to mitigate, and there's that word again, if you have, you're going to develop and you need to mitigate, where should the land be that is protected to offset that impact? And the idea is, as I understand it, is to identify an area, a large area, so that we don't have this patchwork mitigation. And so we actually can create conservation areas to protect species and, you know, and so on. And if that's correct, what I find very interesting is that plan has not been adopted by the very people that are behind this project. Talk about the costs associated with environmental impact reports and abiding by those CEQA requirements.
Well, if I understand your question correctly, developers in the city of Chico would save lots of money if the, I call it an HCP because that's the federal term.
Right,
for this.
Right.
They would save lots of money because they would know where they can build. It would be a done deal. I've been trying to tell, as I said, developers this since the 90s. And you could avoid these kind of conflicts. But the plan itself has been aborted because the city of Chico's, the configuration of the city of Chico's city council changed, and so the city has withdrawn its approval, and therefore also our congressperson tried to put a hold on it during the Trump administration. So there have been all these political shenanigans from preventing it to go forward, even though the biological integrity of the original plan, not the altered plan after some developers got in there, was accepted by everyone until a handful of developers showed up who chose not to participate for the previous 10 years and said, well, we don't like this, and they got the city council to do their bidding. So it would save everyone Time, trouble, and money. If the BRCP could be adopted.
It exists. It's been approved by the stakeholders, and it still doesn't go through. Again, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. Barbara Vlemis, I know I only have a couple more minutes with you, but I really need to bring in the idea. You brought up Stonegate, or you alluded to it, and I think I guessed it correctly. But here's something that I want to toss to you. I've been thinking about it quite a lot lately, and it's this idea of the whole problem with CEQA requirements. And so on the one hand, we hear, oh, it's overburdensome and, you know, we need to get rid of it so that we can develop. But I'm looking at it from exactly the opposite approach. As I see it, is one of the problems with CEQA requirements is that it only assesses a single project and it doesn't take into consideration the much larger projects or the much larger context of what we're talking about. And I think that's, you know, what you're talking about when you referred to Stonegate development, and that is not really considered. If both of those projects, they're going to both be very large, if they both have to do environmental impact reports, it doesn't take into consideration the other development. Is that true? And is that do you see that as another problem with this process?
Well, CEQA, if it's done properly, is supposed to consider cumulative impact.
Okay.
You know, that's a huge priority under CEQA. Again, it's an area where a jurisdiction like Chico or Butte County or Willows or anyone else can give that section short shrift, but that's an area where it can show up and demonstrate what's been happening, and it shouldn't just be what's happening at Stonegate. It should be other projects that have been occurring recently or are planned that would lead to a cumulative impact to a certain area that is required under CEQA.
So, Barbara Vlemis, here's my last question for you, I promise, is so let's go back to the lawsuit. So the lawsuit was just filed last Friday. What's the process, and then what is the time frame? We have different things happening. So the referendum ends on, I think, Friday or Saturday, and if that happens, then I think the project is on hold until it can be approved by voters or rejected by voters. But then the lawsuit is happening as well. What's the time frame on that lawsuit?
Lawsuits are more time consuming, and what happens first is under CEQA, it's a very time intensive process, because you have to accumulate what's called the administrative record, and all the parties have to agree that we have the actual documents that we using in the lawsuit. CEQA cases typically can take a couple of years.
Hmm.
The referendum is obviously going to be much, much quicker than that. But the lawsuit will take probably a minimum 2 years, because the courts are so overburdened, and also CEQA is a time-intensive process.
And here really is my last question. So if somebody's listening and they say, now that sounds like really good work, I know that lawsuits are very costly. How can somebody support the work that you're doing?
They can always support Aqua Alliance. We are a nonprofit organization, and our URL, you can give them that, is aqualliance.net. Also, Smart Growth Advocates, you know, they need support in this effort, so I encourage people that are interested to support what they're doing. I mean, this is a community effort.
Yep, it is.
And just like it was back in the 80s with No Way San Jose, and then Stopping Bidwell Ranch, and all the kind of things that many of us have worked on for many decades. So I appreciate you having me on and your interest in this, Sue, and hopefully we'll talk again about it.
I imagine we will. Barbara Vlemis, thanks so much for your time and, as always, the work that you do.
It's been a pleasure.
Yep. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, we're going to take a really quick break, and just to get you excited about David Rovics. Now, let's be really clear. David Rovics is not going to be singing on the air. It's going to be in the studio. So you got to come down. We're at 341 Broadway. Oh, it is filling up, but I think you should come down now. We're on the fourth floor, 341 Broadway Street. We're in the tall building on the fourth floor. But this is one of my, I'm going to play one of the songs that I just love. It was one of the first songs that I learned from David Rovics. I'm going to guess and say, oh gosh, maybe 20 years ago. So, but you're listening to The Real Issue. Don't go away. I'm going to be right back with Leslie Layton talking about her latest article. Posted on Chico Soul, called Valley's Edge Opponents Worry About Environmental Impact, Fight Over Foothill Development Has Wrecked Chico for Decades. Here's David Rovics.
When I say the hungry should have food, I speak for many. When I say no one should have seven homes, while some don't have any, though I may find myself stranded in some strange place with naught but a vapid stare, I remember the world and I know we are everywhere. Say the time for the rich, it will come. Let me count the ways, victories or hints of the future. Havana, Caracas, Chiapas, Buenos Aires. How many people are wanting and waiting and fighting for their share? They hide in their ivory towers, but we are everywhere. Religions and prisons and races, borders and nations, FBI agents and congressmen and corporate radio stations. They try to keep us apart, but we find each other, and the rulers are always aware that they're a tiny minority, and we are everywhere. With every bomb that they...
All right, we are back. That was David Rovics, We Are Everywhere. As I mentioned, that's one of the songs I kind of learned about David Rovics about, I don't know, two decades ago. And he was always the guy at the major mobilizations that was sort of, you know, singing our history and singing for inspiration. And so as a reminder, when we're fighting the good fight, we have to remind ourselves that we, the good people, we are everywhere. So, yeah, we're back. You're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. We're based right here in Chico, California. My name is Sue Hildebrand, and David Rovics is here in Studio 416, and he'll be playing a live show starting at 7. There are seats still available, so come on down. We're located at 341 Broadway in downtown Chico. So come up the stairs and or the elevator. Come into room 416. It is not going to be a show broadcast on the radio, but it's a very sweet, intimate space. And he is here already, and it's filling up, so come on down. So anyway, quick reminder, if you want to sign the referendum to get the question of Valley's Edge development on the ballot so that voters can decide the future of Chico, the deadline to sign is Saturday. You can find details at smartgrowthchico.org. So we turn now to the decades-long history of Chico's battle between the folks who want to protect the environment and preserve open space and the folks who see the valley as an opportunity for large-scale growth. In her latest article called Valley's Edge Opponents Worry About Environmental Impacts, Fight Over Foothill Development Has Wrecked Chico for Decades, Chico Soul editor Leslie Layton writes, quote, because the state is in dire need of more housing and the same time grappling with climate change and biodiversity loss, never has a struggle over clashing visions of the city's future felt so crucial to so many people. To talk about this battle, on the phone with me is the editor of Chico Soul, Leslie Layton. I am so happy to welcome you to The Real Issue, Leslie Layton.
Hi. Thank you so much, Sue, for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great. This is the first time I've talked with you on the radio, so it's fun to be here with you. So first, I have to say, you are doing such great work over at Chico Soul. There is no other outlet in Butte County that does the kind of deep investigative work that your team has done and continues to do. I'm always so surprised with the good work that comes out of your outlet.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Yeah, especially the last couple of weeks, we've been putting out an awful lot for you all to read.
Yes. I won't say it's hard to keep up, but it's so important. Everything that comes out, I'm like, oh, yeah, how come nobody wrote this before now? So that's good. So Leslie Layton, as you wrote in your article, Valley's Edge, Opponents Worry About Environmental Impacts, you write that this is not a new debate. So talk about the beginning of this battle back in the No Way San Jose days.
Okay, yes, I'm happy to do that. This started when I watched the video of the January 3rd city council meeting where the council approved Valley's Edge. And there were a couple things that happened that really fascinated me. And one was, you know, this sort of how the debate became so polarized that there were people talking about, quote, Addison's Chico versus Bill's Chico. A couple people who wanted Valley's Edge standing up saying, you know, I don't want to live in Addison's Chico. I want to live in Bill's Chico.
Right.
And I thought, what an interesting sort of, you know, metaphor for where this has ended up. And then Alan Hawthorne got up and talked about the Chinook salmon and said, and, you know, he made a reference to the fact that the council had been talking about how much they like the golf carts in Lincoln, the city of Lincoln near Roseville. And I found that surprising and interesting, and apparently Alan did too. And, you know, he just sort of threw into his presentation No Way Lincoln. And I thought, oh, he remembers No Way San Jose, you know, which were bumper stickers that everybody had in the early 90s when I had just come back to this area. And that was when there was a referendum that stopped a big development. Originally, it was going to be 6,000 houses right next to Upper Bidwell Park. And because that referendum was successful, we have that huge open space. You can hike in Upper Park, and you see the big houses on the south rim, but there's nothing on the northwest, you know, except cattle. And it's thanks to that fight that went on.
Leslie Layton, it was supposed to be 6,000 houses. Talk about that a little bit further, because I run into people all the time that say, oh, I grew up here. But there's a lot of people that don't remember that.
Well, Rancho Arroyo was first planned for 5,000 houses northwest of Bidwell Park. And then because they saw the opposition building, they trimmed it down to 3,000 houses. And somewhere in there, and I don't remember exactly the time frame, but I know I covered all this, they resurrected it as Bidwell Ranch, and it was completely overturned. Rancho Arroyo had been approved by the city council, and it was overturned by the referendum. And so when I was doing the story, I got in touch with Steve Evans. I also talked with Michael McGinnis. And, you know, Steve said that it was really him, Michael, and Kelly Mayer that sort of, you know, headed this campaign. And a lot of people joined. And his story about it was just really fun to hear, because he said, you know, this was a Sacramento area developer. And they came in and spent more than $200,000 to try to get this project through. And the No Way San Jose campaign spent about $30,000. Hmm. And he, you know, he was very funny because he said Fox had just opened their little television station. I guess it wasn't little, but, you know, Fox, they had opened their TV station in Chico, and they gave 30 minutes. This is amazing to think about now. They gave 30 minutes to each side. And so he said, we produced a video, but we got all these local people in the video. And the community recognized that these were outsiders and that what they wanted to do had nothing to do with what, you know, Chico, what they wanted for Chico. And he said they would run, they produced flyers putting pictures of him next to this really handsome attorney from Sacramento. And he said, you know, I sort of look like Fidel Castro. But people knew it was me, and they didn't go for this. And that's how Bidwell Ranch got stopped.
It's interesting that Bidwell Ranch got stopped because of a referendum effort.
Yes.
That was the supporters of this giant development outspent, boy, it looks like eight times. No, that's not right. I'm doing my math. Seven times as much as the opposition. So, so power of the people, power of the people. Leslie Layton, I do want to kind of move us a little bit further. Well, actually, I want to two steps forward, one step back. I want to go back to your comment about these two Chicos. You know, we have Bill's Chico, which is Bill Broward's Chico. He's the developer of Valley's Edge. And then there's Addison's Chico, which refers to Chico City Council member Addison Winslow, and he's the only progressive on the council right now in a very progressive city. So it's peculiar, I might say. Leslie, talk about, from all of the people that you have talked with, talk about how you interpret what Bill's Chico means and what Addison's Chico means. Whether it's, you know, I like Addison's Chico, therefore this is what I want, or I don't. I heard that. I listened to the city council meeting on the radio as I was driving back from Sacramento, and I heard somebody, I don't know who it was, say, I don't want to live in your Chico. And he was saying that to Councilmember Winslow. So talk about how you understand Bill's Chico versus Addison's Chico. What's in those different Chicos?
When you look at the design for Valley's Edge, I understand Sean Morgan, I think it was, who said, oh, I want to live there. It looks really lovely. I mean, you know, there's these huge houses with nice big lots, and there's trails for biking and walking, and there's preserves, and, you know, it just, it looks sort of idyllic. And this little village core that's going to have the specialized cheese shop. Well, how nice. You know, it's a really very, very nice design. And so I think it's interesting. And one of the comments that I thought was most interesting was, and I have him in my story, and I will wreck his last name if I say it, Steve Sosnowski, who said, you know, it's beautiful, but it doesn't relate to the rest of Chico.
Mm.
And I thought that was a really interesting comment. And, you know, I don't know really what Addison envisions. I did ask him. And I said, you know, I think...
Leslie Layton, we are... Your internet can... Or your cell connection is getting kind of wonky.
Okay, I'm going to stand right underneath the place where I have to stand.
There you go.
You know, I think Addison maybe... You know, people thought Addison was envisioning high rises. And so I asked him. And he said, no. I envision a mixture of single-family homes, townhouses, and three-floor apartment buildings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think, like, you know, and Addison Winslow can certainly speak more clearly for himself, but I'm guessing it's a vision of a more compact, high-density Chico, which I think has been the fight all along since I came in 92.
Yeah.
Are we going to, you know, have suburbs where people have nice yards, or are we going to have a more compact urban core and a lot of areas outside the city that are preserved environmentally and where people can hike and have open space?
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. I have journalist and editor of Chico Soul, Leslie Layton, on the phone with me. They whip out a lot of amazing stuff, so much good investigative journalism coming out of Chico Soul. And Leslie Layton's latest article is called Will Valley's Edge Provide... Oh, no. I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong place. Her latest article, Valley's Edge Opponents Worry About Environmental Impacts. Leslie Layton, I quoted you earlier in the article, and it says, I'm going to paraphrase, is that you talk about the fact that we desperately need housing, and really in California and in the Central Valley, in the North Central Valley, this area is really sort of the last frontier for development. But also, as Barbara Vlam has talked about earlier in this program, she talked about we're seeing the last of endangered species right here
exactly.
in our county.
Right.
So there's this clash of very important and almost dire consequences from each perspective.
I think that's right. I think this is a very crucial moment, and we're really at sort of this fork in the road, and we sort of, you know, need to decide what our values are as a community and what we are going to prioritize. And it was interesting to me to talk to Barbara, but also the Fish and Wildlife Office, because, you know, they're talking about cumulative impacts, not just Valley's Edge. It's not just about what that development will do to that part of that ecosystem, but really what's going to happen when Stonegate is developed, when Valley's Edge, now there's the Stilson Canyon overlay thing that I haven't really researched yet, but there's a lot of development out there going on, and we've moved from California Park to, you know, to Merriam Park too, so we keep moving outward, and you know, so it's about all of the developments that are going to pop up out there, but also the whole cumulative effect
yeah.
of developing these cities through the whole Central Valley that just sprawl into all the open space and have destroyed, as you know, Barbara just said, so many of our vernal pools and meadow foam plants and other species.
The argument that I hear a lot, like I had one of the organizers from this of the referendum, I had Maggie Scarpa here, I think, in the studio last week, and she made it very clear. She said, "I am not anti-development. I'm not anti-development. I am anti-bad development." And so I think it's a struggle. I think it goes back to exactly what you mentioned is, as a community, we have to determine what are our values and how do we see our community moving into the future. And I don't think anybody, I think we need to just smack it down, because I think it's a false argument to say, if you don't support this, you're anti-development and you are being left behind. And I don't think anybody says that. The question is, how do we want to develop? Which brings me to my next question, Leslie Layton. We need housing. We need affordable housing. And Natalie Hansen, one of your investigative journalists at Chico Soul, she wrote a great article recently published. It was a companion piece to yours, and it's called "Will Valley's Edge Provide the Housing Chico Needs? Environmental Organizations File Lawsuit to Stop the Project." Natalie Hansen discusses that issue of whether or not Valley's Edge will actually address the needed affordable housing. Talk about that. Give us some of the numbers of what she uncovered.
Natalie, and as you said, she did this really excellent reporting, and part of it showed that the Butte County Association of Government, which you referred to earlier, says Chico needs 12,000 more units by 2040. And then we have the regional housing needs allocation, well, the state saying that we need 3,400 units, you know, by, I guess, 2030. And so 46% of those have to be lower income. So we need a great deal of low and very low income housing. And, you know, that's what we lost, of course, in the Camp Fire.
Right.
I mean, that was like, what, probably 10,000 housing units that were fairly low cost.
Right.
Were gone.
Right. Right.
And there's we haven't really figured out how to replace those because Valley's Edge is not going to do that. Well, and I think part of the problem that I'm seeing as I report on this is this sort of idea that we can leave it to the market.
Yeah.
And that is sort of worrisome because I don't think that is the housing that is profitable. So there's 4 acres in Valley's Edge reserved for low-income housing, as I understand it. And Broward's saying, but, you know, there's all these other areas that can be used for low-income housing if somebody comes along with a proposal. And he said to us when we were doing the story, you know, builders build what sells. You know, I don't know that builders are going to build low-income housing because it sells.
Right.
I'm not sure the market is working that way.
Exactly. And the interesting part of a lot of this weird debate, I think, is so I don't want to say a straw man argument, but it's a misdirected conversation. So when we say let the markets decide, you know, I'm blanking out on the city manager's name before this current manager. I think his name was Mark. I'm blanking out on his name. Anyway, what he was saying, he was very resistant to having the city do much of anything around homelessness. It was a real struggle, and he was a nice enough guy. Mm-hmm. And at one point he said, the city is not in the business of building houses. And mm-hmm. and the idea is, yes, it is, because the local ordinances, where we develop, the general plan, all of that is about how do we, the people, want to grow. And so to say that the city doesn't build houses, it's like, yes, the city's policies and the ordinances and the stated vision determines what kind of housing will be built. And so that I struggle with that when people say, well, I'll leave it to the market.
Right. Exactly. And that's the argument that I thought Legal Services of Northern California made really well. And Natalie reports it, at some length and quite clearly in her story, which I hope everybody's had a chance to read, where they say, you know, Kate Wardrop's letter says the city has an obligation to do this. And Valley's Edge, you know, should have a greater allotment for this kind of housing, and the city should require that.
Yep.
And so, you know, that was interesting to me that somebody articulated that argument in that way.
And to be very clear, the city has the power to require that. That's the thing.
It does.
That's what government does, right? That is sort of the, quote, clash between democracy, where we the people decide, and capitalism, where I get to own my stuff and I get to do what I want with my stuff. That's the fundamental clash always. And so I think we should never forget that democracy is as important, many would argue even more important, than the idea of free market capitalism. So, Leslie Layton, I am so excited. David Rovix is the crowd is getting bigger out there. I'm so excited.
Oh, wow.
But I don't want to leave you without having asked all the questions I needed to. What have I forgotten to ask you?
Well, you know, after we talked earlier, I started going through old files, and it was so interesting because I found an article I wrote in 1993 to the Sacramento Bee on a fight over subdivisions in East Chico, and it was about vernal pools and meadow foam, and the Sierra Club and probably Butte Environmental Council, I'm not sure, were in court trying to stop Carriage Park. And the interesting thing about it is that it was sort of a medium, I think those are apartments, it's medium to high density housing, and that was one of the arguments, was that it was housing Chico needed, even in 93. And they were talking about, they were discussing what should be done about the vernal pools and meadow foam that would be lost, and I'll just read you what I wrote really quickly. City officials point out that Carriage Park was one of the few proposed developments to make it over a series of hurdles that have been erected since the discovery of fragile ecosystems on the east side of Chico. And then Bob Boehm, who was our city attorney, those were the days when we had an attorney on staff, he says, "We didn't take into account that the hard lava cap traps water, making it ideal for vernal pools, recalling a decision many years ago to reserve that area for development and keep the west side for agriculture." Mm. So this was, you know...
I only have about 15 more seconds.
Okay, that's it.
Oh, well, you were gonna wrap that up. Go on.
Yeah, it was just interesting to see that this whole thing about developing the foothills really started with the Green Line, and it's been going on since then.
We need to come back to this conversation on another program very soon. Leslie Layton, editor of Chico Soul, thank you so much for being here and for really being one of the only investigative news outlets here in all of Butte County in the North State.
Thank you, Sue, and it's chicosoul.org, and thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. All right, so this brings us to the end of this edition of The Real Issue, which is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Knockout Collision Repair, Chico's high-tech auto body shop specializing in complete collision repair and restoration. Knockout Collision works on all makes and models and always provides complimentary consultations, appointment, or information. You can call them at 899-9202. You can also find them at knockoutcollisionrepair.com. Chico's fast and fair collision repair. All right, we're going to go out with one of my all-time favorite David Rovick songs. And if you're not here yet, get down here because the show is going to start very soon. I want to let you know this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond.
Was a time I'll always remember. I could never forget how reality came down around us like some Western movie set. When the dust all settled, the sun shone so bright, and a great calm took over us like it was all gonna be alright. That's how it felt to be alive.